Welcome to another edition of Raising San Radio. I'm your host, Susan Gallimore, with Van Morrison, and I've been working. Today, the underlying theme of our show is about citizens of the world working to empower themselves for action in the world. Actions that, perhaps taking a long time to come to full fruition, end up empowering individuals to really change the world. First up is the story of an entire country undergoing a major shift. 7 weeks after the election in Iran, hundreds of thousands of people around the world gathered with diaspora Iranians in support of and to protest the treatment of the millions in Iran calling for a referendum on the election. We'll review events and hear reactions in Tehran. Then, at the community and individual level of empowerment, Zan Sam Joy and Janet Whale will update us on the protests against drones that was held outside Creche Air Force Base in Las Vegas, Nevada, from July 10th to the 13th. Finally, to end the show on a high note, we'll talk with Molly Burke, a life coach and executive director of the organization Life Purpose Works. First up, I'm going to share a story for those of you who've ever tangled with a non-responsive airline company that left you feeling frustrated, disempowered, and perhaps even a little bitter. When United Airlines passenger Dave Carroll had his Taylor guitar destroyed by the airline's baggage handlers during a flight to Nebraska last year, he used his musical talents to great effect. After United Airlines repeatedly declined to reimburse him for the damage, he wrote a now famous song decrying their customer service and their brand. He posted the piece, which is called United Breaks Guitars, on YouTube, where so far nearly 4 million people have watched it. The damage to United Airlines' brand has been undeniable. The Times Online in the UK reports that it has cost United $180 million, or 10% of its market cap. While it is not easy to calculate these actual numbers in an era when all airlines are taking a stock hit, and while the world is in recession, the music video nevertheless speaks for itself. To lighten up your day and prove that the individual and customer can fight back with humor and creativity, here is Dave Carroll and United Breaks Guitars.
I flew United Airlines on my way to Nebraska. The plane departed Halifax, connecting in Chicago's old airport. While on the ground, a passenger said from the seat behind me, "My God, they're throwing guitars out there." The band and I exchanged a look, best described as terror, at the action on the tarmac, and knowing whose projectiles these would be. So before I left Chicago, I alerted three employees who showed complete indifference towards me. United, United, you broke my Taylor guitar. United. Just admit it, I should have flown with someone else or gone by car. 'Cause United breaks guitars. When we landed in Nebraska, I confirmed what I suspected. My Taylor had been the victim of a vicious act of malice at old. So began a year-long saga of pass the buck, don't ask me, and I'm sorry, sir, your claim can go nowhere. So do all the airlines people from New York to New Delhi, including kind Miss Earlwig, who says the final word from them is no. I've heard all your excuses, and I've chased your wild gooses, and this attitude of yours I say must go. United breaks guitars. Well, I won't say that I'll never fly with you again, 'cause maybe to save the world I probably would, but that won't likely happen. And if it did, I wouldn't bring my luggage, 'cause you'd just go and break it into a thousand pieces, just like you broke my heart when United breaks guitars. United,
United,
you broke my Taylor guitar. United,
United,
some big help you are. You broke it, you should fix it, you're liable, just admit it. I should have flown with someone else or gone by car, 'cause United breaks guitars. Yeah, United breaks guitars. Yeah, United breaks guitars.
So you can also go to YouTube and search for United Breaks Guitars to view this video. It's really well worth the effort, and I encourage you to do so. Moving on to an entire nation taking on its unresponsive and oppressive leadership, July 25th was a global day of action in support of the people of Iran refusing to accept results from the June 12th election in that country. Protests have been held around the world and in San Francisco Bay Area on Saturday in solidarity with Iran's opposition movement and calling for the Iranian government to release opposition activists. These massive rallies were timed to coincide with the inauguration of Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, which could take place any day. San Francisco was one of many U.S. cities representing over 110 countries around the world where people gathered. In San Francisco, where I was also invited to speak, the event was attended by over 5,000 very lively people, the vast majority of whom were Iranian. Nevertheless, luminaries such as Attorney General Jerry Brown, San Francisco supervisors, and California representatives also spoke. Meanwhile, in Tehran, Iranian police and pro-government militia attacked and scattered hundreds of protesters in response to the demonstrations being held around the world. A witness speaking on condition of anonymity for fear of retaliation said that protesters in Vanak and Mirdamad districts chanted "Death to the dictator" and "We want our vote back" before they were attacked and beaten by police. As night fell, Iranians across the city gathered on their rooftops and chanted "Death to the dictator" and "Courageous neighbors, thank you for your support," apparently in response to the protests around the world. I think this is the most heartfelt and touching thing that I have heard about this event, about what's going on in Iran, is every night in the dark, people get together and call to one another to encourage one another and to hold up their spirits. And these chants go on through the night. And again, in this case, they're saying "a death to the dictator." More touching is "courageous neighbors, thank you for your support." So while the rooftop chanting had been a common feature in the immediate aftermath of the June 12th elections, it has largely disappeared in the recent weeks, only to reappear now in the last couple of days. The opposition says that President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad won the June 12th elections through fraud, sparking protests around the country. Hundreds of activists, as I said, have been imprisoned in the ensuing crackdown, and at least 20 people have died. Go to the website norcal4iran.com. That's norcal, the number 4, iran.com, for audio, video, and pictures from around the world. Also, As I say, you can hear my little presentation as well as an interview with me following on KPFA Radio. It was very touching to participate in this again. There were so many people and so much energy to change things in that country. So before we go on, I want to remind you that I'm your host, Susan Gallimore of Raising Sand Radio on KZSU Standard FM 90.1. If you're looking for premium olive oil from Palestine, the Rumi and Nabali trees date back to Roman times and even before that, and their oil is amazing. You can visit rebuildingalliance.org to order it online. You won't be sorry, and you'll also be benefiting the people of Palestine who are daily struggling for nutrition and basic supplies to keep their heads above water after the attacks on Gaza from December and January this year. So again, for excellent olive oil from Palestine, go to rebuildingalliance.org. As I mentioned at the beginning of our show, today we're following a theme about citizens of the world empowering themselves for action to change the world. Actions that perhaps take a long time to come to full fruition, but nevertheless empower individuals to really change the world. And in line with this theme, let's look at actions going on at the community and individual level of empowerment. And joining me on the phone for this is Zan Sam Joy from Berkeley, California, and she'll be followed by Janet Whale. Both Sam and Janet were instrumental in getting the event at Creche Air Force Base going. And Sam Zan Joy was the organizer of a group of indomitable Code Pink women that traveled to Nevada. Now, again, this is in July. In Nevada, it's extremely hot. But they wanted to witness and protest the ongoing use of unmanned aerial vehicles or drones dispatched from Creche Air Force Base in Nevada to the combat zones in Afghanistan and now overflowing into Pakistan. So let's talk with Zan Sam Joy on the phone, and then we'll follow up with Janet Whale. I want to welcome Zan Sam Joy, a long-term and very active member of Code Pink, who most recently organized an event at Creche Air Force Base. Welcome, Zan.
Thank you, Susan.
What prompted you to organize this event?
Two things. One, I heard you speak about when you were promoting your book about drones, and you said that there were a handful of drones in 2001 when we invaded Afghanistan, and now all of a sudden we have 7,000 drones.
And I believe that's gone up to 12, right?
I'm sure. I believe that was the first time I'd even heard about these drones. And then I also got a call from Marie, who lives in Tahoe, and she was talking about the Voices for Creative Nonviolence. And their action at Creche Air Force Base, and Father Louis getting arrested and other people getting arrested, and we talked about what was happening at Creche. And we just said, we have to do something. I just feel like drones are, everything about war is horrific, and drones are just like even more horrific. They're on the same level as nuclear bombs, and I just don't think that we can continue with drones being part of our military force.
And what you've done is you've really tried to bring to the surface this issue of drones, because so many of us really don't understand or really know. As you just mentioned, there were a handful of them early on, and now we have about 12,000. So you have actually gone and taken this topic on, and you're really embracing it and continuing to push it, aren't you?
I am, and I'm hoping, you know, you and I, a lot of people have been working for many years to try to change our military policy, our military attacking all over the world. And I think one of the biggest things that's hampering us is the number of people who are not joining us. I mean, how can we live in this country knowing that people are sitting in their offices behind a computer ordering these unmanned planes to go somewhere and destroy so many people?
Yeah, and it's very complex because, of course, the military families believe that this is better than sending their son or their daughter into combat, and yet the people that are actually the victims of these things are invariably civilians. It's turning out to be more and more the case, isn't it?
Even the military themselves say that for every one bad guy, quote-unquote, that these drones kill, 50 civilians are killed.
Mm-hmm.
And how can we accept that? Do we accept that it's okay for us as a country to go around the world killing people as long as American lives are not in danger?
And this is the crux of the matter, is are we all of the people of the world human beings at the same level, or are we really, as we are taught in the United States, that some of us are really better than others and deserving of more privilege than others?
Yeah, and this whole attitude that how dare anyone take American life when we go around taking anybody's life that we want to.
Yeah.
You know, even the concept of targeting a bad guy. You know, I was brought up saying that people who are bad or who we think are bad get arrested. They go to trial. They go to court. There's a judge. There's a jury. And somebody makes a decision. I was taught that it's dictators and, you know, horrible people that assassinate other people. And here we are supporting drones going to other countries and targeting people that who has said that these are bad people?
Mm-hmm.
The Pentagon?
And
the
most
military?
Yeah, the most shocking thing really is that our new President Obama was actually sending drones out within 3 days of his inauguration.
That's so heartbreaking. Obama never said that he was going to escalate war against Pakistan. He did tell us he was going to escalate against Afghanistan,
mm-hmm.
but he did run as an anti-war candidate.
Yep.
Candidate, and for him to do that is just. And again, Susan, it's really not about Obama. It's about we sat there and watched Obama the third day after he was in office escalate this drone attack against Pakistan. And what did we do?
Well, it's what we quite often do, which is say, oh, well, there's nothing much I can do, so it's the way the politicians act, and we don't do anything.
Yep.
Zan, what is next for you now? I know that you're taking this to the streets some more. How can people get in touch?
We just had a strategy session. We've identified many components of this drone phenomena, and we are trying to, like Code Pink always does, we're trying to have actions that will focus on each one of these components, and starting with the recruiting of these young men to become pilots of these drones, which is happening right here in Berkeley. So we're continuing and we're increasing our time at the Marine Recruiting Station. We're also trying to do a public awareness campaign. We have flyers that we're going to be handing out. We're going to be talking with people. We're going to try to be doing a street theater to actually let people feel and see what it is that these drones are doing, because it is like science fiction, Susan.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
People just don't get it, but people who are at the receiving end certainly get it.
Yeah. So if people want to get involved, they can contact Code Pink via...
They can call the Code Pink number, which is 510-540-7007. They can also email info@bayareacodepink.org. And we also have a no-drones discussion list that if they email and want to be on that list, they can. And there's two events coming up, or actions coming up. There's on August 30th, we're going to have an emergency roundtable on drones in Berkeley, where we're going to hopefully get lots of people from the community interested and talking about what we're going to do. And then the end of September, we're planning on going back to Creech and demonstrating there, not just because it's Creech, but also because some of the people who were arrested for doing civil disobedience are going to be going on trial then. So we're hoping to do another two-week encampment there.
Okay, and we'll keep our listeners aware of all of those events as they get closer. We're also going to be talking with Janet today, who is at Creech, so she can let us know how that event went. And I want to thank you for being with us. And yes, we'll stay in touch on this very important issue.
Thank you so much, Sue.
It's my great pleasure to welcome Janet Wheel. Janet was part of the group that went to Creech Air Force Base in Nevada. And I invited Janet to share with us some of what happened there. Janet, how did this all turn out at Creech?
I arrived in Nevada, Las Vegas, which is 35 miles south of Creech Air Force Base on July 9th. On July 10th, we had a teach-in and meeting at a Las Vegas library with activists from Nevada Desert Experience and another Code Pinker who lives in Las Vegas. Then the weekend, Saturday and Sunday, we had a gathering at the Goddess Temple Guest House near Creech Air Force Base. We had meetings. We discussed Kathy Kelly's and Voices for Creative Nonviolence's work in April at Creech Air Force Base. We also did a couple of actions on Las Vegas Boulevard, which is known as the Strip in Las Vegas, of getting out our general anti-war and specifically anti-drones message to tourists there. Then on Monday, July 13th, was the main action at Creech Air Force Base. Shall I go ahead and describe that?
Yeah, please do. I know a number of people were arrested, weren't they?
Yes. There were a group of about 20 of us who assembled along Highway I-95 directly next to Creech Air Force Base starting at 6 a.m., and we were there until about 8:30 a.m. This included several Code Pinkers from California and Arizona, and one Code Pinker from Nevada, several activists, including Franciscan priest Louis Vitale, and a couple of Franciscan sisters, and other people from Nevada Desert Experience, and four activists with the anti-nuclear campaign Prop 1, who had driven out from D.C. to be part of this. So Creech Air Force Base is along I-95. You can see it very clearly from the highway, and we were holding our banners and signs saying peace with Afghanistan, drones kill peace and people, and other messages, both positive messages such as create peace and wage peace, and specifically anti-drone and anti-airstrike messages. People arrive at the base mostly in their own private vehicles. These are both the members of the Air Force and civilian workers who are contracted to do construction work and so on the base. But we did see a couple of large Air Force buses, blue school bus type buses coming with large groups of young people, cadets in the Air Force, who are being trained to control drones there. So after we had seen a couple of those buses turn into this sort of long driveway leading up to the gate at Creech Air Force Base, Father Louis, Toby Blome, and Sister Megan decided that when the next bus came, they would get out into the road and block or attempt to block one of these buses from going into the base. So when the third bus turned off the highway to go into the Air Force Base, they did go into the sort of driveway, and Father Louis was kneeling. I think Toby was standing. I think Sister Negan was also kneeling in front of the bus, and it happened quickly, and the bus sort of screeched to a stop without giving a warning or really saying anything. A Nevada State Patrolman and a couple of Las Vegas Metropolitan Police who were there just went out and started dragging, pushing, and manhandling the people who were kneeling in front of the bus.
Hmm. And what did the rest of the group do?
We were, at that point, we had been, first we had been more spaced out along the highway so that we could just be getting our messages out to motorists going by. But by that point, this was probably about 7 o'clock that morning, we were more clustered around this inlet road or drive. It was like a large driveway going into Air Force Base. So we were more clustered around. We were taking photos. A couple of us, including me, got quite upset, especially when we saw Sister Megan, who's in her 70s, being dragged across the asphalt, scraping her back.
Wow.
And also seeing Toby having her arm violently grabbed and whipped around. So we were yelling at the state patrolman to stop being abusive, and we were also, of course, still holding our banners and signs and so on. So there was a kind of ruckus that went on with various people going into this driveway or other people considering it, and the cops yelling at us and back and forth. What finally transpired was that Toby was put in the patrol car. She was cuffed with metal handcuffs and put in the back seat of the car, and the patrolman said that he could detain her there up to 2 hours.
Yeah.
We were very concerned. It was getting quite hot by that point already, and some of us demanded to know if the air conditioning at least was on, which he assured us it was on in the car.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand how somebody can be detained like that for up to 2 hours without charges.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, Toby was not given a citation. Father Louis and an activist from Washington, from Washington State, were given misdemeanor tickets for a pedestrian misdemeanor.
Uh-huh.
It was $190 per ticket. So they were cited and released with those tickets. Nobody went to jail.
Uh-huh. Well, Romano, listen, so we're talking with Janet Whale about the an event that happened protesting drones outside Creech Air Force Base from July 9th through the 13th. Janet, what now?
Yeah, around this time, around 7 to 7:30, so in other words, starting about an hour after people had arrived for their morning shift or their day shift at Creech Air Force Base, we began to see drones flying overhead. They come out of hangars, and then they fly over this runway in front of the control tower that's there at the Air Force Base, and then fly out, continuing over the desert. The second one that I saw detoured from this straight course and flew over us briefly. And some people think that we were photographed by this drone. I can't confirm that.
Mm-hmm.
What I can say was that the power of literally being under the drones and seeing and hearing them close up gives you a visceral sense of what people are experiencing in Afghanistan and Pakistan and Iraq in a way that you just cannot get from reading or hearing about it. People remarked on how eerie and strange it was to look up at this machine that looks somewhat like a small plane, but there are no doors or windows, and obviously there's no human presence in that machine that is nonetheless doing surveillance and flying overhead. And there's something very creepy, scary, threatening in a different way. It certainly, of course, is also threatening to have a military plane directly overhead.
Exactly.
But this is a different kind of experience, and it made me realize how much we do, people on the ground, do assume that there is a human presence piloting a plane or a helicopter, and that in some sense we do count on there being a human mind and heart in those military machines. And to see something that is purely a machine flying directly overhead is, it's eerie.
Mm-hmm. Disconcerting, to say the least.
It is,
Yeah. Well, Janet, I want to thank you for being with us and describing this, and I'm going to invite you to stay in touch with us and keep us abreast of other events going on out there or other events here that you think listeners should know about to perhaps learn more about drones.
Thank you so much. I would just like to add that some of us are planning to return to Nevada and Creech Air Force Base September 30th, Father Louis has a court date for his actions at Creech Air Force Base from last April. We want to be there in the court in Las Vegas on September 30th to support him. And we also want to be, again, doing actions at Creech Air Force Base the first couple of days in October, which will be leading up to national actions calling for an end to the war and occupation in Iraq and the U.S. airstrikes in Pakistan, which have definitely stepped up under Obama. So we'll be returning pretty soon, and then we have plans for later in the year and then next spring as well.
Great. We'll stay in touch with you on all of that. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan.
So now, final segment today, Molly Burke is a life coach and executive director, or as she calls herself, Le Grand Fromage, of Life Purpose Works. So welcome, Molly.
It's such a pleasure to be here, Susan.
Well, it's great to have you, and I want to tell listeners first how I met you. You were coaching at the Craigslist Foundation, an annual get-together of all of the people in the Bay Area and actually around the country who work in the nonprofit sector. And on that day, you and a number of other coaches were offering your services to folks from the nonprofit world. And I was lucky enough to get some coaching from you. And yes, it was lovely. And I wanted our listeners to have the same kind of experience, understand a little more about how coaching works and what it can do for a person. So I'm going to ask you first to explain that. How did you get into this world and explain what coaching is?
Well, I found throughout my life, I've spent the last 25 or 30 years really helping people manifest what's possible in one milieu or another. And I came to a life purpose path juncture in my own life, brought on by circumstances around a divorce, and found this calling. Pursued it, got my certification, learned everything I could about it, and I've been doing it full-time for almost 10 years now. Coaching is a remarkable profession, and it's an amazing tool for people. What I like so much about it, and what's so different, as you say, because there are profound differences between coaching and practices in the therapeutic community. The most fundamental difference that I find and that is accepted throughout the two professions, therapy and coaching, is that therapy presumes that there's some brokenness, if you will, either stemming from the past or in present behavior, that something's amiss, and it requires going back and looking at what has caused the break. Coaching assumes that you're naturally creative, resourceful, and whole, that you have all of the tools that you need at your disposal, if not directly within you, and that working together with a collaborative alliance, as a coach and client do, that tremendous strides can be made in your personal life, in your professional life, in your spiritual life, in your physical life, in your whole life. There you go.
Mm-hmm. And how has it changed your life when you first started working in this field?
Oh, my Lord. Well, it changed my life because I got clearly defined. One of the most amazing transformations was that I had been doing this sideways all my life. making things possible for people, having them manifest various parts and pieces of their lives that they wanted to have come together. And I serve them in this way. But having a cogent, cohesive language to put to it, having definitive practices that I could use, tools, techniques, strategies that provided replicatable results for my clients, changed everything for me. Gave me amazing tools for empowering myself, empowering my friends, empowering my community, empowering my clients. It's been amazing.
Hmm. And let's talk a little bit about the Craigslist Foundation event that you were at. How did you get involved with that?
Oh, it's wonderful. Well, I got involved with that through the school that I went to, Coaches Training Institute up in San Rafael. I had researched many, many coaching schools and finally settled on CTI because I really liked their curriculum and how they approached coaching. And CTI was asked by Craigslist to provide a cadre of certified coaches so that quality of coaching would be assured. There would be a benchmark there of professionalism. One of the things that CTI provides is certification accredited through the State Board of Behavioral Sciences as therapists and counselors are accredited in much the same way. We're not licensed yet. We're working on that, but accreditation is now available, and it assures the client of a certain level of professionalism. So we were all invited to come down and volunteer our time and our services to remarkable people like yourself who are doing really important things in the world.
I mean, what was amazing to me was there were about 24 coaches there that day.
Just the ones you saw. There were some in the morning and some in the afternoon. I think in total there was close to 75 coaches that were available.
That's great. And I know a couple of people that I went to the event with came away with the same impression I had, which was, not only the same impression, but the same feeling, which was, oh, that was so helpful. That was so great because I am terrified of the fundraising aspect or, you know, whatever aspect in the non... It's usually fundraising is a tough one for a lot of people in the nonprofit world, isn't it?
Oh, it really is. And I remember our discussion. Do you mind if I talk a little bit about our
discussion? Please go ahead.
Fabulous. Well, I remember that you brought to me some concerns about fundraising. And part of the work that we did together was about shifting your perspective about what fundraising really was for you. And as I recall, we talked about the difference between sales and enrollment.
Yes, talk a little bit about that for the benefit of our
listeners.
Well,
I was hoping you'd talk a little bit about that. Well, I'll start and then you can finish. enrollment has to do with, and the difference between enrollment and sales. Sales is very, you're going to do what I want. It's very directive. It's more about my agenda and less about our agenda.
Mm.
And when we talk about enrollment, talk about sharing your experience of something about which you are so passionate, speaking personally, Susan, that you were so passionate, when you spoke about what was really important to you, to me, I found it remarkably compelling, very engaging. In that regard, truly enrolling. So what happened for me is, instead of hearing your sales pitch, I experienced your profound passion for what it is that you're doing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that remarkably engaging, very interesting, truly dynamic. And so what I sought to do in our coaching experience together was to reflect that back to you and show you that when you are grounded in that place of passion, of conviction, of purpose, that what you say and who you be is incredibly engaging. And at that point, it's not sales anymore.
Right. It's enrollment. And I would like you to know that, in fact, I took that session that we had together to heart. I went off to the library. I got some books on fundraising. I've now sort of defusing the fear and actually empowering myself to you know, look at it in a different way. And in fact, the small group that I currently consult with, it's called the Rebuilding Alliance. We build homes in war-torn communities, currently focused on Gaza. We just this last week went out and joined a what's called a global giving event, and we went from I think it was we had about $200 that people had donated, and we found a way to encourage people or enroll people, if you like, to donate up to $10,000 came in 2 days. It was remarkable, because what we're trying to do is give the people in Gaza lights for a soccer field that they have built out of the debris of the neighborhoods from the bombing in January.
Uh-huh.
And so for us, it was just wonderful to see that people are really concerned, and people were really put, you know, were willing to put as little as $10 down. And the people in Gaza now will have lights for their Ramadan soccer tournaments. So that's indirectly because of the coaching that took place that day.
Well, I'm completely thrilled to hear that the perspectives that we discussed were so actionable for you.
Yeah.
That you actually got such great results. And that's one of the remarkable things about coaching. Therapy seems to take a long time. You know, you need to get to the root of things and create your workarounds. But as is really obvious by the results that you're telling me, coaching can happen in 15 or 20 minutes. A substantive shift can happen in your perspective and subsequently in your behaviors. And I'm thrilled to hear that you're pursuing fundraising more deeply. And I couldn't be happier to hear about $10,000. What a difference from $200. If that isn't measurable results,
exactly.
I don't know what is.
Yeah, exactly. And to know that it's going to, you know, help these kids get back on their feet after this terrible bombardment. Molly, let me remind our listeners that we're talking with Molly Burke, who is the Le Grand Fromage, or the executive director of Life Purpose Works. But you have other things going on too. You have books out, and let's allow our listeners to learn a little more about that.
Oh, well, the great grand passion that I am pursuing is around my life purpose work. Through coaching people who make a difference, and coaching people who wanted to make a difference, I noticed that there was a gap between those who wanted to and weren't succeeding in living a more authentic life in their work life, in their play life, in their romantic life, in all of those places. And the difference, I became curious as to the differences between the two folks, those who were living purposefully and those who weren't, because the people who were living purposefully were, frankly, a lot more fun to coach, and it was a lot easier. So I got really curious. The curiosity led me to a series of inquiries, and that became codified into what is now known as the Life Purpose Discovery Method. What I found is that very easily, by asking 5 different questions, I could compile a list for each question of affinities, aversions, talents, gifts, core values, triggers, distress patterns. All sorts of things came out rather effortlessly from people engaged in this process with me. So in about 2 hours, then, I created a method wherein in 2 hours you get absolutely clear about why you're here and what you're meant to do.
Hmm.
And it's about becoming conscious of the context to which you were born in this life. Much like, I'm not much for predestination, but I do think that we come to this life with certain ways that we're going to play this game.
Mm-hmm.
For example, we're women, or we're men, or we're born in Africa, or we're born in America, or we're rich, or we're poor. We have physical challenges or not. I think those are ways that we come in to play this game called life. And I believe that there's an overarching context that we are meant to express in this lifetime, and it's unique for each person. So by following this method of divining answers to these 5 questions, the answers lead us to patterns. The patterns lead us to purpose, inexorably, absolutely reliably.
Mm, I like that.
It's simple, because we're supposed to know. I looked out in the world and saw that If I wanted to get clear about my life purpose, when I started getting curious about this, it would take weeks or months or years of study. And I thought, well, how can that be? If we're supposed to live this, how could it be so complicated? And it's obviously not complicated. And I absolutely know that I channeled this, because if you'd left it to me, I'd have made it complicated. So I know this is some sort of divine inspiration. And I'm just glad to bring it to the world.
So if listeners want to get in touch with you, they can first go to your website, which is lifepurposeworks.com.
They can.
And find out more about these tools and also these books that you're describing here.
Oh, yes, the book, my first book is called Your Life on Purpose, which is the workbook that takes people through this process for themselves. So if you don't want to come or you can't be near me, you can always get the book and do it for yourself.
Okay. And, another person that we interview quite often on our show, his name is Peter Dunlap. He is actually a clinical psychologist. But he describes some of the same things that you're describing, and the languaging that he uses is that we're finding our destiny. We're finding our life purpose in this kind of work. And I think that's a very rich word, too. Finding your destiny is... it has a sense of real accomplishment, doesn't it?
It really does. You know, a friend of mine sent me a quotation from Buddha, and I'm going to probably massacre it in this moment. Please forgive me. It says, we must discover our work, and then we must give ourselves to our work. And that is the essence of, and I just completely massacred that glorious quotation. But that is the essence of it. We have to find our work, and then we have to give ourselves wholeheartedly to our work,
mm-hmm.
to discover it. And so if I can help somebody find out definitively in words from their own lexicon of power what it is that they're meant to do in this world, then I've helped to raise the consciousness, the overall consciousness of the world, which is one of the things that you're trying to do with your work, Susan.
Right, yeah.
And that's what we have in common, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I'm going to ask you to just add anything you would like you think it's important for our listeners to know before we finish.
Lift as you climb.
Can you repeat that?
Lift as you climb.
Interesting.
And what I mean by that, and you are a living embodiment of that, which is why I was inspired to say that as you climb this arduous ladder of creating funding and awareness for war-torn Gaza and the kids and all the things that make a difference to you, you are lifting these children, lifting these communities. So as you climb toward your goals, you are lifting others.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's it for all of us. Lift as you climb.
The other side of looking at that too, lift as you climb, is that as you go along your path, lift others that are trying to be on their path along with you.
That's exactly my point.
Yeah.
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
Bring them along.
Yeah, life is much richer when you're living in a community of like-minded people.
Oh, and the more that we can awaken our fellow men and women to the awarenesses that we have, I think we're reaching a tipping point on the world,
mm-hmm.
as a whole in the earth, and that those of us who are working passionately toward the betterment of humanity are tipping us in the right direction. I'm so grateful that you're doing your work in the world.
Well, I'm grateful that you're doing yours, Molly. It was really lovely to meet you that day at in the Craigslist Foundation.
Such an honor.
And again, it's lifepurposeworks.com. Get hold of Molly through lifepurposeworks.com, the website, and learn all about how you can get on track with your life. And Molly, it's been a great pleasure to have you. Thank you.
Oh, it's been an absolute delight. Anytime you'd like to have me back, just ask.
And that's our show for today. As usual, all views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guests, and not KZSU or Stanford University. You can contact me directly at susan@raisingsandradio.org or visit our website, raisingsandradio.org, to listen to all the shows in our archives. We've been going on now for almost 3 years, and all of our shows are there. They're all downloadable, and they're yours to use if you're a nonprofit organization, and you can download a show, or if you can't download a show, send me an email and let me know what you're looking for, and I can help you there. Also, let me know what you aired. Again, Susan at Raising Sand Radio. And we'll go out again with Van Morrison and I've Been Working. Have a great week, and we'll see you back here next week at 2 o'clock at Raising Sand Radio on KZSU Stanford FM 90.1.
Love you.